We would like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Preborn. When a mother meets her baby on an ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection, and the majority of the time, she will choose life. But she can't do it without our help. Preborn needs us, the pro-life community, to come alongside her. One ultrasound is just $28. To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby, or visit preborn.com.
Election Night Coverage 2024 on American Family Radio. AFA President Tim Wildman, Vice President Ed Vitagliano, News Director Fred Jackson.
Wesley will be here. Walker will be here.
And the American Family News Team bring you election returns and analysis from a Christian perspective.
We'll be up here for 5 or 6 hours.
Yes.
On Election Night beginning at 6 Central, it's Election Night Coverage 2024 on American Family Radio. Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Good morning. Well, it is Tuesday, October 22nd, so you know what that means, exactly 2 weeks away from the 2024 election, and the mainstream media is just going wild over Donald Trump's visit to McDonald's over the weekend. And as I'm reading the headlines and the continual fall of this, and by the way, the memes are absolutely great. The best one that I saw so far, well, a couple of them. One was that Trump finally fixed the McDonald's McFlurry machine. And so finally, McDonald's thanks Trump for, you know, saving the brand. That one was funny. And then also someone said, bless Donald Trump. I ordered a 6-piece nugget and he gave me 7. So that was great. The memes, of course, are great. But the mainstream media and as the sort of fallout continues, because this was a really good, not just photo op, but, you know, obvious event for Donald Trump to go and troll Kamala Harris and say now that he's worked a solid 20 minutes longer at a McDonald's than Kamala Harris, but also to just seem like the average American. And we all know that Donald Trump loves McDonald's and he's eaten McDonald's for years, but to actually go and put on the apron and serve people and show that he's willing to just be an everyday ordinary American, I think was a really good move for his campaign. And of course, the leftists are panicking over this. They're trying to say that this was just a setup, and well, yeah, of course it was. I mean, do people think he actually like filled out, you know, the W-9 and actually worked for McDonald's and he went through the interview process? Like, of course it was. But then, you know, the late night comedians are mocking him. And then, you know, some of the leftist headlines are like the bizarre stunt and all this. But if you look at the trajectory, and of course, you know, we don't really put a lot of stock in the polls, but this was ultimately a good thing. And it sparked a lot of conversation about the economy, about minimum wage, about workers actually being able to earn a living wage. And so the impact of the overall conversation, I think, is what we want to focus on this morning. And joining me now to discuss is Hogan Gidley, who is the AFPI Vice Chair for the Center for Election Integrity. And he also worked on the 2020 Donald Trump campaign, which is how I know him. Of course, he was also in the White House during the first Trump administration. So good morning, Hogan. And what did you think of Donald Trump going to McDonald's?
It's great to be with you, Jeff. Thanks so much for the time. You know, it's just so funny when you watch the left in full meltdown over this, you watch the media in full meltdown. It's not because this event was a failure. It's because this event was a success. If Kamala Harris had set the same thing up for her campaign to do and had it on the calendar for a year, let her do exactly what she did when she had dinner parties coming up and recreate her at the fryer at McDonald's for a year, prepping for this, prepping to go to the window, she still couldn't have pulled off what Donald Trump pulled off in this moment. He's just good at this. He is so natural. And when you watch him stand there and talk to those folks, he didn't know what they were going to say. He didn't know what they were going to do. But he can communicate with everyday Americans with ease. And that's why people like him. That's why people want to vote for him, because it's authenticity. They don't agree with everything he says necessarily. They may agree with all the policy. They may not like some of the bombast or the rhetoric. But the fact is, the man is relatable in a way that is baffling to so many, because he's a billionaire businessman from New York. But in those moments, you get to see him at his best. And I'll say this. I've been doing politics for 25 years. I got started with Mike Huckabee, Rick Santorum's race for president. I've been all over the country with all kinds of candidates. It is difficult. Campaigning is, by its nature, very awkward and odd to strike up conversations and react on the fly to all kinds of different people and personalities. And Donald Trump is just good at it. And so when you see these moments, no wonder the left is angry, because they know their candidate would never, could never do anything like that.
Yeah, that's such a great way to frame this, is just authenticity. And that is something that people love about Trump, and what they loved when he first started running in 2015, is that he was just very authentic, and like the rhetoric or not, he told it how it is. And people just love him because every interaction, people just know that he's a genuinely nice person. And, you know, you and I, of course, know him personally. And that's been my personal experience with him as well, is that he remembers things. He's genuine. He's genuinely funny. And that comes across on the campaign trail. And that's something that you can't manufacture. And Kamala Harris and some of these other, you know, elites in their ivory towers and stuff could only hope to pretend to be that sort of fake genuine, and it's very obvious. And when she's interacting, and even in some of these interviews, and she's cackling and she sounds nervous, it's awkward and it's cringe for the audience, and you can tell that difference. And so I think you're right on that. And when Donald Trump does these kinds of viral moments, I mean, it sparks so much more in the conversation. And the economy is one of the biggest issues, along with the border, obviously, and election integrity, which I want to get your comments on as well in a moment. But for the economy, I mean, this really has put the economy at the forefront 2 weeks from the election. And so where do you think that conversation is positioning the Trump versus Kamala overall conversation?
Well, first, before we go off this, let me just make this point, too. There was a moment in that time when he was at the Friar, and everyone knows Trump is like a germaphobe, and he looks at the camera and goes, see, never touches human hands. Like, he's very self-deprecating, like, hey, I don't even like the germs, but look, that's why I like McDonald's, because you don't have to touch the food. It comes to you clean, cooked. I don't have to worry about it. And so when that conversation gets started about what he was doing, back to your question, it shows you the cost of living increases under the Joe Biden, Kamala Harris administration. The decisions that she has made really have gone to make our lives so much worse. So Kamala looks around and acts as though all of these things are just happening to her, like she's just an innocent bystander, like she hasn't been the vice president for 4 years. These things are happening because of her. These are her policies, her signature, her vote that gave us the high prices for gas and groceries, her decisions that opened the border, not by accident, but by design. And in addition to that, this McDonald's appearance by Trump also exposes, we talked about Trump's authenticity, but it also exposes Kamala's fake, phony, inauthentic nature, because she has claimed, newly so, that she worked at McDonald's. But yet, first, it was she did it to pay for her way through school. Then her campaign had to change that. It goes, oh, no, now it's just really for extra money. There's no record of her working there. She's never said which McDonald's it is. So, like, there are all kinds of other problems that go along with this claim by Kamala Harris as well. It puts the spotlight on a bad economy and a bad candidate. Both of those things are really problematic for their campaign.
Yeah, and we talk a lot about this program about the worldview differences and how, you know, it really shouldn't boil down to personality of who you're voting for, but often that does influence a lot of people. I mean, and it, for Christian conservatives, we're voting our values, you know, regardless of the rest of it. But for the vast majority of the average American and the voters, people want to vote for somebody that they like. And I'm speaking with Hogan Gidley, who is the AFPI vice chair of the Center for Election Integrity. And Hogan, the polls really do show that this election, at least on the top of the ticket, is a razor thin margin. And of course, when you go to kind of the media and also the social media reaction, Kamala's side can't believe that that's true. And they're saying, oh, she's definitely going to win on a landslide, by a landslide. And then the Trump campaign and the Trump side is saying that definitely can't be true. He's going to win in a landslide. So from your perspective, having been in politics for so long and also on the election integrity question, where do you think we sit 2 weeks out from November 5th?
Well, it's interesting. Polls are kind of razor thin, but Trump clearly has a more substantial percentage of the American voter now more than he ever did in 2016 or 2020. So I'd much rather be in that position. There are questions that exist. I mean, at the end of September, for example, the 1st of October in 2016, Donald Trump was around 43%. He finished at 47%. The same thing in 2020. It was around 43-44%. He finished at 47%. Well, now he's at 47%. So does that mean everybody fixed the polling and he's at 47%? That's where he's going to stay? Or does that mean he's at 47, he's going to finish closer to 50 because they always underpoll Trump? I don't know the answer, but I can tell you what it feels like and what I see are trend lines moving in Donald Trump's favor. It is going to be razor thin. These things come down to get out the vote efforts, voter mobilization, voter registration, ballot harvesting, ballot chasing, doing all those things where legal, of course. Poll watchers and poll workers, that's what it comes down to, that ground game. The Trump campaign outsourced a lot of that to third-party groups, which is kind of revolutionary. And you know, that's what the campaign of Donald Trump has done the last several cycles, is things that no one thought possible. So this is kind of a new thing for them, and I think they're doing it in a really wise, cost-effective, cost-efficient way. So that's exciting. But it's still, you know, in politics, Jenna, I'm paid to be nervous, and I'm really nervous. So I guess my job security is there, because I am nervous all the time about these types of things. But I have to tell you, I really like the direction this campaign is headed in. The people seem to be settling down. Kamala Harris, every campaign she's ever run, you know, has failed in time. The question for me always was, by putting her in place and taking all the votes away from Joe Biden and just giving Kamala Harris the nomination, would there be enough time to expose her as the fake phony fraud that she is, the bad candidate that she is? And it turns out, it seems as though right now she doesn't need that much time to prove how bad she is. Remember, the media was saying over a year ago that Joe Biden had a Kamala Harris problem. They were saying a year ago that Kamala Harris was the most unpopular vice president in history. So it's not unheard of. You can try to keep making fetch happen. I'm just here to tell you, you can't sell a bad product. And Kamala Harris is a bad product.
Yeah, and I think that you're right. And that is what has been so evident in just the few months that she has run. She has run a campaign saying joy and vibes but no substance, and negative about Trump. That was her entire Bret Baier interview, was nothing substantive, yeah. No responses. And yet now Trump can go out and talk about all of the actual substantive issues, and that matters for people who care about substance.
Yeah, of course. And you know, I joke all the time when I'm on a campaign trail, either on the Trump bus or when I'm giving speeches, you know, the media will kind of make fun of Donald Trump all the time. And I'm like, well, that's interesting, because I went to the grocery store and bought groceries. It was a $300 grocery bill. And the clerk looked at me and said, how would you like to pay? I put my hand in my pocket and I pulled out an empty hand. I said, do you take joy? And she's like, no. And then I'm like, oh, you must be one of those places that only takes vibes. And they're like, what? No, we take money. And I'm like, oh. So it turns out these empty slogans and these, you know, meaningless words don't do a thing to improve the lives of the American people. And so I think the joy is clearly worn off. And something that's not really being reported a lot, although it is starting to bubble up, the Biden people don't like the Harris people. And the Harris people don't like the Obama people. And the Obama people don't like the Biden people or the Harris people. And so all of a sudden, you're going to start to see some cracks in the dam. And if she were to lose, even before then, I would imagine some more stories come out. But I'm here to tell you, there's going to be some backbiting coming out of that campaign like you've never seen before for all the bad blood that does exist.
Yeah, very, very interesting. And 2 weeks to go. But Hogan Gidley, really appreciate your time and commentary. You can follow him on X at J. Hogan Gidley. And he is the AFPI Vice Chair for the Center for Election Integrity. So you can go to AFPI and see all of the great work that they do as well. We will be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning. Could the fate of America's children be tied to the fate of our nation itself? Much like the abortionists who end the lives of the unborn, the left is determined to undermine the pro-life movement. First, they target the babies. Then, they come for the rest of us. Preborn stands as a beacon of hope for the most defenseless among us, preborn babies. Every day, Preborn's network of clinics rescue, on average, over 200 babies while surrounding expectant mothers with God's love and offering a free ultrasound. Rescuing the miracle of life has never been more crucial as we navigate this time of moral decline in our nation. Will you join Preborn in protecting the least among us? For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound and give a mother the chance to choose life, not only for her baby, but for herself. An ultrasound doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby. Or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com/AFR. Preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. And so we are 2 weeks out from the 2024 election. And so, of course, this is the time that a lot of politicians and, of course, the mainstream media and then the campaign, they're just, it's all in crunch time. And the other top topic beyond the economy, of course, is the border. And famously now, or maybe infamously, Kamala Harris did not directly answer Bret Baier in the Fox News interview when he just simply asked her, how many people do you think have illegally crossed the border over the last 3.5 years of your administration? And she has completely sidestepped any of those issues, just says, you know, this is a serious issue. This is why we're making it a priority. Well, how exactly? Of course, she didn't answer that directly, but this does remain an important issue. And for me personally, I actually think that this is the number one issue, because if we allow this many people to cross the border, and the estimates, you know, are staggering as far as the millions of people just in the last almost 4 years have crossed the border illegally, have come into the country. And now, of course, the left wants to allow all of them to vote, allow all of them to have representation in not only the state legislatures, but the federal Congress. I mean, this would fundamentally transform America and our entire population demographics, and also how we do government. And I think that that genuinely is the purpose. So joining me now to discuss all of this and more is our good friend Alan West. And you can follow him at Alan West. He is the chair of the Dallas GOP and also the executive director of the ACRU Action, which is the American Constitutional Rights Union. So good morning, Alan. And thanks so much for joining on this topic.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Jenna.
Yeah, so we're 2 weeks out, and I think that, you know, while both sides are claiming victory in the Bret Baier Kamala Harris interview still, where do you think we're at in terms of the overall emphasis on the border and that issue headed into 2024?
Well, I can tell you that here in the state of Texas, the border is a preeminent issue. As a matter of fact, just about 3 weeks ago, we had a woman that was assaulted in a very upscale neighborhood here in the city of Dallas by four members of the Venezuelan gang Trindiragua. She was taken, tied up, dragged to her own home. She was beaten, threatened with torture, and was robbed. And so this has brought this very much so home here. And it is not just that which we see happening. It's the four aspects of trafficking. It's the drug trafficking. 250,000 Americans dead from fentanyl in just 3.5 years. That surpasses what we lost as far as soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines in the Korean and Vietnam Wars. When you look at the human and sex trafficking, the fact that we have 300,000 children that are missing because of this administration. And then, of course, the terrorist trafficking. A couple of weeks ago, up the road in Oklahoma, we found out about an Afghan man who was planning terrorist attacks on Election Day. So all of those things combined make this a preeminent issue, and it is an economic issue. It is an issue about our representative democracy. It's a health care issue. It's an education issue. So I think that the Republicans and all of our candidates in these final 2 weeks need to tie that border security issue into all of these different aspects of the American way of life.
I could not agree more. And as I said in the opening, I think that this is really the number one voting issue for me personally at the top of the ticket, just because of how much control, unfortunately, the executive office does have to direct a lot of, some of these procedures in terms of amnesty, you know, what they can do, even though Congress needs to step it up. And we know constitutionally they should be making sure that the law reflects the American position. But law enforcement is the executive branch. And if you're not enforcing the law, then the law is merely just on paper. And it doesn't even really matter what the law is if it's not being enforced. And we're seeing that contrast between the federal government and some of these states, like the state of Texas that you mentioned, and even my home state of Florida now, with Governor DeSantis, saying we're not going to allow, all of these people to just come in and take over our state. So what do you think that the right, by and large, not just the Trump campaign, but even congressional races, all of these things, what can they do in the next 2 weeks to clearly articulate why this election is so important for the future on this issue?
Well, you just have to simply point to the Constitution. It's Article 4, Section 4 of the Constitution, which says that the federal government, the United States, is supposed to guarantee to every state protection from invasion. They have failed. This is an unconstitutional administration. We don't need new laws. We have laws on the books. They just need to be enforced. And it was 91 to 92 different executive actions taken by the Biden-Harris administration that undermined our national sovereignty and our border security. We're not in operational control of that border. And so just point to the fact of Laken Riley in Georgia. Point to the fact of the mother, 37-year-old mother of five in Maryland. We have these stories all across the country where people are losing their lives because of this lack of border enforcement. And yes, this is about them trying to fundamentally transform the United States of America. That's why they're doing it. They have admitted it. They don't support the SAVE Act. They want to see illegals voting. They want to see illegals represented. And I think that's what every single person running for office, I don't care if you're running from dog catcher all the way up to the president of the United States of America, you need to make this a preeminent issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm speaking with Alan West, who is the chair of the Dallas GOP and also the host of the Steadfast and Loyal podcast. And you can follow him at Alan West on X and go to his bio, see all of those great links and the Substack and everything there. Because a lot of these issues that you talk about on your Substack and also on your podcast, Alan, are so just well put. And I love having your commentary on these issues, because especially from the perspective of being in the state of Texas, so many of our listeners who are there in the state of Texas, constantly write in, especially after I have a guest on from Texas, who are saying, these issues are so important, and they want to make sure that the border is secured. So let's talk about the down ticket races before I ask you. I also want to get to foreign policy in Israel, but a lot of people are very concerned about the Senate race there, and Ted Cruz, last poll I saw, he was only maybe a point point up. I think he's probably up a little bit more than that. But where do you see that race right now?
Well, I would predict that Ted Cruz defeats Colin Allred anywhere from 5 to 6 percentage points. I think it's just last week they had the debate between the two of them right here in Dallas, and Ted Cruz just completely obliterated Colin Allred. And Colin Allred is right along the same lines of Kamala Harris, Barack Obama. They just try to hide, run on image, run a lot of campaign ads, but there's no substance there, and that was very apparent. So I think that we have seen a little bump in the polling for Ted Cruz after that debate, and I think that a lot of the shine and the lot of tricky little things of Colin Allred that drew attention to him has now faded away. People are going to be voting about these critical issues, like you say, the economy, their safety, their security, going to the grocery store, gasoline prices, things of this nature. And that's not something that Colin Allred, Kamala Harris, or anyone with a D after their name at the state and federal level could really run on. They don't have a record. They have an agenda, and it's a failing agenda for the American people.
Yeah, so well said. And Senator Mike Lee published an op-ed in Fox News, and that's actually up on my X feed. And in fact, I will pin this to my profile for listeners who want to go and read that op-ed. And I'm asking him actually if he's running for GOP leader, because he makes the point in this op-ed, Alan, that that with Mitch McConnell stepping down as the GOP Senate leader, that election is very important, and there's not a lot of attention being paid to that. Obviously, for the GOP, they want to get the majority of the Senate and ensure that if Trump is reelected, then he will actually have a Senate that will help advance America First policies, push through judicial nominations. That's really important. But if there is a Kamala Harris administration and a continuation of Biden and her administration for the next 4 years, that the Senate could actually thwart and prevent some of the more disastrous policies, and certainly judicial nominations on the federal level that would be extremist, that would be leftist, that would be woke. I mean, look at, Ketanji Brown Jackson and some of her decisions. And so this is a really important issue. And where do you see the composition of the United States Senate overall? I mean, it is in favor of the GOP just because of the math and how many seats are available that were Democrat controlled versus the Republican seats that are up for reelection. Where do you see that majority line falling?
Well, I think it's going to go the way of Republicans. As a matter of fact, when you look at some of the recent ads that Casey has been running in Pennsylvania and Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin, they're not talking about Kamala Harris. They're actually running ads that align themselves with Donald Trump and his policy. So that lets you know that they're very nervous. I think that without a doubt, we'll be able to keep our seat here in Texas. You will see that seat in Montana flip. And like I said, you may see Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. There's one other that I'm forgetting, I know. But I think that you will see the GOP pick up maybe 5 seats in the Senate. But the key thing is, as you just articulated, you've got to have strong constitutional conservative leadership that, in one case, will support President Trump and the agenda, legislative agenda, to restore our economic security, energy security, national security, foreign policy, judicial positions, things of this nature. But also, they'll be ready to stand and be a bulwark against more of this progressive socialism and Marxism that you have seen for the past 3.5 years, and really the 8 years of Barack Obama as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So all of these things matter, and this is why we here at AFA have been encouraging everyone, make sure that you are registered. A lot of these registration deadlines are passing very quickly. Pennsylvania, I think it was just yesterday, closed that ability to register, but a lot of states have day of registration as well. But make sure that you are, if you are eligible and you're registered, to get out and vote your values all the way down ticket, because all of these races matter. And also, I want to also get Alan West to foreign policy and why the top of the ticket matters on this, because as we've seen with Israel continuing to be in the headline, now they have decimated Hamas and Hezbollah's leadership just in the last 3 months. And that headline is actually coming from Axios, which is incredible as kind of a leftist source. But where do you see the foreign policy issue and piece of this for this election?
Well, think about it. Today, over in Russia, you're going to have a meeting of these BRICS countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, Iran, and a few others. They're talking about undermining the dollar as the currency of the world. They're also looking at Russia and Iran and China, you know, signing formal agreements. Donald Trump had Iran bankrupt. They were not able to support Islamic jihadism. You did not hear about Houthis, Hamas, Hezbollah, Islamic jihad, any of this during the Trump administration. Russia did not go into Ukraine during the Trump administration. As a matter of fact, the Trump administration killed some 200 Russian paramilitary of the Wagner group in Syria. Didn't hear a peep out of Vladimir Putin. This is about regard and respect, and that's what we have to restore. This is about restoring Ronald Reagan's maxim of peace through strength, because right now what people see is abject weakness, and they're preparing for, you know, if Kamala Harris comes along. And that's why you see Israel taking the actions that they're taking. They're not going to risk their safety and security with a Kamala Harris.
Yeah, and this conflict, I think, has been extended a lot longer than a lot of us thought it would. And there will be a very different, at least, attitude from the United States and potential, you know, ways of engagement or not, depending on who is elected at the top of the ticket. And these questions obviously came up in the only presidential debate that we got, also the vice presidential debate. You know, there were some touching on foreign policy. But do you think that the average voter actually, that this is one of the key issues for them, or is it a little bit more in the political weeds in terms of something that won't necessarily influence where people, you know, generally their motivations?
I think you have to bring it back to the border. I mean, when you know that you have 30 to 35,000 Chinese single military age males that have come across this border illegally, that's why foreign policy is important. The strength is important. When you have this amount of Islamic jihadists and terrorists that have come across the border, and that's been verified by the FBI Director Christopher Wray, that's why foreign policy and the border, these things tie together. So you have to have a strong foreign policy. You have to secure your border in order to protect the American people. And again, that's what the Republicans should be articulating. You got to bring all of these issues together, without a doubt, and that's the important thing. And why would the Biden-Harris administration put their boot on the neck of our oil and gas industry, but yet prop up the oil and gas industry of Iran?
Yeah, I mean, all of these things are so important, and this is why voters do need to be informed. But as we continue to say, we need to vote our values. And so just the last minute I have with you, Alan West, what would you say to the Christians and, you know, those who are listening? Because the Barna survey is that, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 35 million self-identified Christians are saying they're going to sit this one out.
Well, it's very simple. You go back to March of 2020, what was the first thing the government shut down with COVID? You know, Donald Trump was at a McDonald's. McDonald's could stay open, but churches had to be closed. So in other words, a Big Mac was more essential than our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And so if you're a so-called self-identified Christian, if you think that a hamburger is more important than Jesus, sure, don't vote, and then you'll get what you deserve.
Yeah, well said, and I hope that everyone listening, you do get out and vote your values. And we're going to be talking about a couple of other things that are incredibly important coming up next. But thanks so much to Alan West. Always appreciate your commentary. Again, you can follow him on X at Alan West. And he is the host of the Steadfast and Loyal podcast and also the chair of the Dallas GOP. We'll be right back with more here on Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Welcome back. So as we are 2 weeks out from the 2024 election, it is not just the top of the ticket. It is not just the congressional races. It is not just the gubernatorial or even the state legislature. We also, as Christian conservatives, must be concerned about all of these constitutional amendments or citizens initiatives, propositions, whatever your state calls them, on the ballot. Of course, here in Florida, we've been talking a lot about Amendment 4, the proposed so-called right to abortion that would be cemented in the state constitution. And if you are in Florida, or even if you aren't and you're just interested, later today at 1 p.m. Eastern time, Governor DeSantis is going to be doing another town hall with doctors. If you are in the central Florida area, that is at a Winter Garden church. You can go to his X and learn more about that. Or if you're not anywhere close to it, but just interested, that will be live streamed on his X and I think other social media pages. And really tune into this, because I think that the overall understanding of what he articulates in terms of opposition of some of these amendments can be applied across the board to other state initiatives. There are at least 9 other states that have these abortion amendments on the ballot. And you have to realize here, when we're talking about a state constitutional amendment that is done by citizen initiative, this is a way to amend the highest state law of the land, bypassing the elected representatives in the legislature and the governor, and putting language into the state constitution that would be very, very difficult to change. I was in an X space last night for Florida's Amendment 4, and one of the lawyers that was in that space was saying that in Florida's history, according to him, there was only one time that something that actually was cemented in the Constitution and passed as a constitutional amendment was later either overturned or further clarified in terms of the text by a future initiative. So it's very, very hard. And in the state of Florida, it takes a 60% threshold to pass. I think that actually needs to be higher. And a lot of states, including my former home state of Colorado, the threshold is even lower. And this is a way that if it's just, you know, around 50% plus one, and in order to pass this type of amendment, then basically what you're doing is putting direct democracy as an availability to the voters in a way that I don't think is really a good idea. I mean, we have a representative republic for a reason, which is so that you don't get this 50% plus a little bit way that the voters are able to simply bypass the legislature, and we need to make sure that that is protected. And so one of the things that's incredibly important, though, regardless of whether you're talking about Amendment 4 in Florida or you're talking about any other proposition or initiative, the language and the text itself matters. And you still have 2 weeks, unless you early voted, you still have 2 weeks to turn in your ballot. And I would really strongly encourage everyone listening to actually go read the text. Don't just read the summaries. Don't just read the impact statements. Those are all important, but actually read the text and then go to, for each issue, go to a source that you trust and that you have trusted before this particular initiative was on the ballot, to see what their interpretation and analysis of the text is. Because, for example, my former home state of Colorado, and for those listening who are in Colorado, Amendment 80 is a proposed school choice ballot measure. Now, I personally very much support school choice. Regular listeners know that I was homeschooled, and I'm very glad that my parents had that choice and had that option, and that homeschooling is legal currently in all 50 states. We want to make sure to protect the parents' rights to choose and direct their children's education, including religious-based education. All of these things matter. We've had a lot of different guests on talking about school choice. But Amendment 80, and I was listening to a friend who hosts a local radio program in Denver talking about this the other day in Amendment 80. And I think that the language here is what is really problematic and is very misleading to a lot of voters in Colorado. So this is a great example of why the text itself matters, because the ballot measure, Amendment 80, is talking about school choice, and that's a good thing, talking about parental rights and guaranteeing that parents have a fundamental right to direct the education of their children. But the things that are really concerning about this is the language of saying that children have a right to quote-unquote quality education. And the proposition itself doesn't actually define that term, quality. Now, think about that for a moment, because, you know, you may be saying, well, that's reasonable. And obviously, you know, we want kids to have a quality education. Well, what does that mean, quality? And who gets to define that? And do we actually want the government defining that? Do we want a lot of litigants and judges when this inevitably, if it passes, challenged in courts? Do we want the government determining for you, the parent, what it means to provide a quote unquote quality education for your child? Now, I could, especially in the state of Colorado and how liberal, unfortunately, it has become over the last, you know, 15 years, which is a huge part of the reason that I moved from Colorado to Florida, is because of how liberal leftist trending that state is going. I could absolutely see that while this proposition, I don't think the drafters intended for this to be a kind of poison pill loophole, but I think that organizations like the Christian Home Educators of Colorado, like the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, who oppose this based on its text, are right that there is actually a poison pill, because I could absolutely see that Colorado judges could interpret this undermining the parents' right to choose their education and actually have genuine school choice for their kids, and say, well, the best interests of the child means that a quality education means that you have to be substantively educated with at least, you know, say a master's degree in the subject that you're teaching. And so completely foreclosing homeschoolers in Colorado, for example. Now, do I think we will get there? I mean, it's a possibility, right? And this is why organizations like HSLDA exist, so that they make sure to protect parental rights in choosing home education for children against these types of potential pitfalls and potential ways that the government would interpret it. And so, so the text really matters. And so it's not just about, do you support or oppose school choice? I think for most Christians and conservatives, we would say yes. We are fans of school choice, and for a lot of parents who want the option to not send their children to state-funded Marxist institutions, and I would certainly encourage every parent listening, based on my own experience, and an experience of other homeschooling families that I know, find any way possible that you can provide your child with an alternative. Then it's not just public education, but state-funded and state-directed education, because that is the most important gift that you can give your child, apart from, of course, a personal relationship and knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So I'd really encourage that. But when we talk about school choice, the point is we can't just look at these amendments and wait until we're in the ballot box or we're hurrying after work to fill out our ballot and go, oh, okay, you know, what is Amendment 80? Let me Google this really quick. And, oh, this is school choice. So yeah, of course I'm a fan of that. So yes, I'll vote yes. You don't really realize the implications perhaps of what you are actually voting for. And this is why the text matters, because the government defining quality education is going to be a huge quagmire if this passes. And what I'm seeing across the board, and that's just one example, that's not, you know, Amendment 4 or the abortion example, or, you know, things that the left pushes back and says, well, we know what viability for abortion is, so, you know, why are we even having these conversations? What I'm seeing in a lot of these propositions, constitutional amendments and ballot initiatives across the country, is that especially when they are put forward by special interest groups that are funded by leftists like Soros or, you know, any sort of leftist group, Planned Parenthood, what have you, a lot of these amendments are, I think, purposefully vague in their wording so that it will be difficult for the state legislature to come back and actually define what the scope of what this is, because a judge will look and say, well, you know, if the voters wanted to define this, then they would have voted this down. So, you know, we have to interpret it as broadly as possible. That's one of the things that Governor DeSantis talks about in some of these town halls, is how dangerous that this is when you have not just legislation that can then be tweaked and crafted with other legislation, but when you're actually talking about a constitutional amendment. So what I'm seeing is that across the board, a lot of the text of these
initiatives are very, very vague. And the ones that are put up by the left, I think, are intentionally vague. Some, like Prop 80 in Colorado, I think are just poorly drafted and probably not the intent of the school choice advocates to put that term quality in. But this is why it's so important that you make sure to have a wide variety of legal opinions, legislative, you know, opinions on the drafting of the text, because the text matters. And while the rest of it may be good, there may just be one clause or one term in this text that ends up being a poison pill and is the reason that some of these organizations like CHECK or HSLDA can't support that particular initiative. So it's incredibly important to know this and know what is on the ballot. It's also very important if you are in a state that you have judges on the ballot or you have judicial retention. Don't just ignore that and say, oh, well, you know, judges are probably doing a good job, so sure, or, you know, I don't know enough about it, so I'll abstain. All of these things are very important to know how your particular state works, who exactly is on the ballot, and what are they on the ballot for, and again, the text of these amendments, because this is the opportunity that we have as citizens to engage in our process. And some of the questions and frustrations and things that we have the rest of the year is based on this one election day. And so while we talk so much in a presidential election year cycle about the top of the ticket, and of course that is incredibly important and we need to be praying for God's providence and blessing on America and the outcome of all of these elections in all of the states, we also need to be doing our due diligence and knowing what is on the ballot in our state and knowing where we stand. And of course, getting advice and getting the opinion of organizations or individuals that you trust is perfectly appropriate. I mean, every election cycle, I have a lot of people from my home church, you know, here in Florida, or my former home church, still kind of a home church in Colorado, you know, asking, hey, I'm in this county, you know, what's your opinion on this? And as a private individual, I can have opinions, right? Now, AFA Action is a great resource. We don't tell you there which candidate to vote for in terms of Democrat or Republican, but we can give you a lot of the guidelines, and we certainly can comment on a lot of these propositions. If it's an issue, not a candidate on the ballot, then we can have an opinion as an organization, as a nonprofit on that. But as a private individual, just me, myself, I can have opinions, and I certainly do have opinions on some of these things. And that's why on my personal social media, you'll see me talking and occasionally endorsing candidates at various levels in my personal capacity. But these types of things like Amendment 80, I think are very, very dangerous when you have a lot of conservatives in that state that haven't really thought through a lot of the text and the implications of this. And they're just advocating for school choice. And they're saying, you know, hey, this is good. And if you are somebody who lives in that state and you just hear that, you know, maybe on the radio and you think, oh, that's great. Okay, well, I don't have to, you know, do my own due diligence. I would say no matter what you hear from any source, even here at AFA, I mean, and of course, we try to bring you the commentary and opinions from a biblical Christian worldview, have vote your values, all of that. But don't just rely on what the hosts here say or even AFA Action. Do your own research in your home state. Know what is on your ballot. Know the text of these amendments. And if you have questions, you know, you can reach us. Comments at AFA.com. You can reach me, Jenna at AFR.net. If you have questions about things that, you know, we can answer, that's a very good thing. Or go out and actually look at some of these other resources on each of these individual issues, whether it is the pro-life initiatives, whether it's school choice amendments, whether it's raising state taxes. I mean, a lot of different initiatives that don't get a lot of media attention are often on your ballot. And go to a resource that you trust, look at their opinion, read the text for yourself, see the opposing views and why people are for it, why they're against it, and also who is for it and who is against it. Because often that's going to tell you, oh, okay, generally speaking, this is why, you know, these are the types of people that are the same as my values, and they either support or oppose this particular initiative. So the bottom line of this entire show, if you take one thing,
take this. Be informed, do your due diligence so that when you vote, and I hope that is a when you vote, you are voting knowing exactly what you're doing, and you're not just going to be influenced by the ballot summary or the mainstream media or whatever you happened to read on some blog post about the initiative. Absolutely take your ballot and make sure that you have control over it and you know exactly what you are doing. Again, you can reach me and my team, Jenna at AFR.net, and we will see you tomorrow morning. Have a wonderful day.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, including Preborn. Preborn has rescued over 200,000 babies from abortion, and every day their network clinics rescue 200 babies' lives. Will you join Preborn in loving and supporting young moms in crisis? Save a life today. Go to preborn.com.